Shannon, right?
Yes.
Shannon, actually, thank you for showing that phone, because that's the main reason why I wanted to talk today, is to kind of communicate the idea that SoilWeb has changed quite a lot, and I haven't done a great job of informing the public about those changes. And when I realized this was over the fall and summer, I was getting a lot of emails from people with Android operating systems where they had the native SoilWeb app saying, hey, this thing doesn't work anymore. And the main reason is we switched from that handheld native app to an interactive website. And the reason why we made that shift is because it gave us an opportunity to make a lot of updates and upgrades to SoilWeb. And also it gave us the ability to work across multiple platforms. Now this online website that works just like an app can work on your smartphone, can work on a tablet, or a desktop. So that's kind of why we made that change. The iPhone app still works. The Android one is dead. And we just couldn't keep up with the Android operating systems were always changing, and they always needed us to make an adjustment. It also costed money for us to keep them on the app store. So we kind of discontinued the Android operating system, iPhone, SoilWeb app, keep the iPhone app, SoilWeb iPhone app still is going. But what I want to do today is just kind of show you this new tool, a relatively new tool, it's been around a while, and then show you some of the things that we have going on now. If you go to our website, you can get the quickest access to all of our apps. And we're always, you know, trying to work on new apps. And I suspect in the next few years there will be more that are coming. The best way to go to our website is just Google CA Soil Resource, California Soil Resource Lab. And then on the apps page, tab, you'll see a variety of apps that we're working, that are working right now. In addition to the iPhone app, which is not shown in this photo or this screen capture. We have SoilWeb Earth, which is essentially just SoilWeb and Google Earth. A lot of consultants use that. It doesn't work with Google Earth Pro. I get a lot of people, I don't think it works. Some people with Google Earth Pro make it work, but I haven't been able to get it to work. And I do get a lot of people asking me about that. SoilWeb, plain old SoilWeb app in the left corner, that's our newest version of SoilWeb. And I'm going to demo that for you. C is our new Series Extent Explorer app. Soil Properties app is just for California. Shows you specific soil properties that we've mapped and turned into an interactive website. And then we have the Soil Agricultural Groundwater Banking Index, which is more of a decision support tool that I'll talk real quickly about. So how many people have been using these new apps? Okay, so about a quarter of the room. So this isn't completely will be completely boring to you, I hope. This is what the brand. So, oh, sorry, go back real quick. You can just click on these icons and it takes you to the app. So if I clicked on SoilWeb in the upper left corner, this is usually what most people see unless they've changed some settings on the app. When you first do it, it'll send you around Davis. And one of the upgrades that we made is that we, you know, the old iPhone native app that you download on your phone, you don't see imagery, right? And so what the quick fix or the first fix that we did is that we integrated the imagery with the information delivery. And so this is what you'll see first. This is the town of Davis. The first thing that a user might want to do is go to the menu, which is in the upper left-hand corner there, and click on that. You can adjust the map settings. You could click a hybrid, which shows satellite imagery, roads. You can click just a road map. You could just click terrain or just plain satellite. It depends on the preference. But this is Surgo imagery on the line work that is overlaying on the Google Maps interface. And so a lot of people ask this question of how often do we update? We're now in sync with how often NRCS updates, which is once a year in fall is when we update that soil survey data. We're usually a couple months later than NRCS's update too. So you can play with those settings. At that same menu tab, you can go to your zoom to location feature. You can also use the zoom tools, the pan tool, to just move the screen around, and the imagery and the line work will update as you move through. At some scales, obviously, if you're too far out, that line work won't show up because it looks like a plate of spaghetti. So it comes on at certain scales. But that's all the navigation features that Google Maps has. And one that I use the most is just, you know, enter a location. You can also press get my location, and that it will essentially triangulate your position based on where you are and cell towers. It'll also, if your GPS is enabled, it will work off your GPS. So it works a lot like the iPhone app, the native app. I have noticed that some people, when they're in remote terrain, the native app still works a little bit better if there's no cell phone coverage. At some point, you know, all these apps fail if you don't have good coverage. So I'm just showing what we did here. We typed in Capitol Reef National Park, and it zoomed to that location. You use those pluses and minuses to kind of zoom in and change scale. At this point, you can click on that map, and it will allow you to query the data. So what we've done is the old web pages and apps, the kind of data was separate from the display. And what we've tried to do is integrate the data with the display so that it's a little bit more interactive experience. And so when you click on a map unit, the map unit composition page comes up. You can see that it outlines the percentage of the different components. It gives you some of that map unit aggregated data. Tells you what kind of map unit it is. It tells you the drainage class of the dominant condition, and it also tells you the drainage class of the wettest component. So just some general summary information for the map unit. Most people go straight to the soil component information, their component page, and that's accomplished by just clicking on the soil name that is in blue. Not all our components have data for them in Surgo, so we can only click on those that are blue. But if I clicked on the, Cata, I should have pronounced that before the talk, Catahoula or whatever, Catahoula? Catahoula. Catahoula. Thanks. Catahoula series, this is what typically shows. What you'll notice is we have these categories. You have the soil profile category, and you can expand or contract that box by clicking on the little arrow, blue arrow. We have a soil taxonomy category, a land classification category, hydraulic and erosion ratings, and soil suitability ratings. I should say that our soil suitability ratings are a little bit patchy. I can't remember, we just had some of the western states. I think we ended up getting all the United States in there, but it's not complete. We don't say why some things are limited at this point. And the main reason why is it really slows down our system and bogs down our system to load all that tabular data. But we've had enough complaints that we're going to work on getting that going. You can expand or contract those arrows to get into those different categories. And so you've probably seen these profiles. These are generated from the OSD. We take the color, the true colors from the OSD, and we convert those to RGB colors. So those are the true colors of the soil, assuming your screen is tuned. And let's see, what do I do next? There's all kinds of ways in which you can interact with the data at this point. You can click on the official series description tab up there, and it'll populate the OSD for that series. You can click on these soil property boxes there on the left. We have organic matter, clay, sand, silt, linear extensibility, cation exchange capacity, several soil properties, and you click on that and it'll draw you a soil depth profile of that data. And what I often do is I click on the view source data, it gives you a table of all that data by horizon, and that more often than not is something that I use more than just looking at the graphs, but sometimes the graphs are helpful. Let's see, what else do I have to show on that? We try to we put those question marks all throughout the data to, it's not dissimilar to SoilWeb, to really try to help the user understand. We're assuming oftentimes that non-soil scientists are using this, and that's probably not the case. We try to describe as much as possible and provide links to that information. So when you click on like wind erodibility group question mark, it explains what the wind erodibility group is, how it's derived, what the major properties are, and links to the official series handbook, soil survey handbook, to get more information on that. So trying to give some transparency to the jargon and classes. Sorry, I'm jumping all around here. Another thing you can do, you're not showing it in the slide, I should have added another slide, is you can click one of our brand new tools. You see the Soil Data Explorer in blue at the upper left corner. There's three names there, a little small. Soil Data Explorer, Series Extent Explorer, and the Official Series Description. You can click on those, and the first two are our new apps. So if I clicked on the Soil Series Extent Explorer, this is a really fun tool that I think we developed late spring, early summer. And what it allows you to do is to type in, well, this would automatically feed your series into that app. But if you're using it externally from SoilWeb, you type in your series extent, your soil series name, and it maps its distribution in the entire United States. And so here we're working very locally, and so it has a somewhat limited extent, and it automatically shows the distribution. What we have is bounding box that snap around that map unit. So it's not the exact extent. It's showing you where it is. But we also report the actual acres of that series as at a spatially weighted average as it appears in map units. So we do report the exact acreages of those series. And when you're using it separately, you can add to the map. You can add up to three different series to this map and map them across the United States. So this is if we were using it externally. You can see that I've mapped three different series here across the United States. It's just a great way to kind of get a feeling for where these soils occur across the United States. And this also has the function, in which I find that I'm using a lot now, is you can, in the upper right-hand corner, it says Open SoilWeb. I can't even read it. Open SoilWeb. If you click on that, and then it gives you a little cursor, and it allows you to click on the map where your soils are mapped, and then it takes you to SoilWeb again. And so it's a way to kind of go back and forth between the apps, because oftentimes we want to map a series, and then we want to learn more about that series. So this allows you to go back and forth between the Series Extent Explorer and SoilWeb. And also what we can do, you can see there's, you can maybe imagine, there's another link below each series name, and that link is to our Soil Data Explorer. And the Soil Data Explorer is another new app that we created. And we designed the Soil Data Explorer to give some people a better understanding of the map unit and the series and how they're related to one another. So you can see a lot of different tabs across the Soil Data Explorer. This first one is just showing you how a soil relates to other soils in that map unit and in the soil survey area, the soils that are most similar. And it shows you a cladogram, shows you how those soils differ in their taxonomy and also in their horizonation. Clicking on the data, lab data tab, shows you how that soil, the properties, a variety of properties, change with depth. And now this data is different than Sergo data. This data is snapping or pulling from the Kellogg Soil Survey Lab. And so some of those pedons, some of those series might have one pedon that is measured, others up to 10. And so we'll get varying output from that depending on how much data is populated. But we're mapping the mean and then showing the 95 percentile, the 5 and 95% percentiles of the data are the shaded areas around that line. And so we're trying to show a variety of soil properties. And this is measured data from the national lab. Well, I already showed this. This is just showing a different series, how it's related to other series. You can click on the block diagram tab, and it provides some insight into the mapping concept, the soil landscape model that the users have, or the mappers have developed. And so I think this is a very helpful way to bring some transparency to the kind of digital world of soil survey. You know, we used to get this stuff in written format, in hard copies. We kind of lost that in our digital world. And so this is an opportunity to try to get some of that insight behind the concepts that the mappers had when they were describing the landscape. And then finally, clicking on the map units tab, this shows, if you were to query San Joaquin series, it shows you all the different map units that San Joaquin appears in. And so it's a nice, quick way to kind of look at how that series is described by map units. So, you know, we're always trying to upgrade and keep pushing the envelope with SoilWeb and all our soil survey tools. It's not an easy thing to do. It's not the most fundable project, as you can imagine. We've been fortunate enough, we got started with NRCS funding, and then that leveraged some internal, very generous internal funding from the University of California, which we have 2 more years on. So I think we're going to continue to have resources to keep pushing and developing new tools. But what is a little bit more fundable is creating decision support tools from soil survey data. And so that's where I think a lot of our effort in the future is going to be. And so this is our newest app, which we call SAGBI. If anyone can come up with a better name, I'd be happy to entertain that. But somehow it stuck. I should have pushed the students to think of a better name. But it's called the Soil Agricultural Groundwater Banking Index. And man, this has really become a popular tool in California. What it is, essentially, we're trying to predict what soils are best suited in California for diverting floodwaters during times of excess onto agricultural land to recharge the groundwater. And the idea is to develop this geographic template planning tool so that growers and policymakers can start to learn what are the soils that might be limiting, and we consider limitations based on the hydrology of the soils or the physical characteristics of the soils, but we're also couching that in the idea that we're pairing these soils with different cropping systems. And so certain cropping systems, tree crops, for example, are prone to disease and damage when there's prolonged saturation. So the model was developed to kind of account for that risk factor of having a soil that might be saturated for too long. And so we think it's a great planning tool, and it's gotten an overwhelming amount of excitement from the media. And I mean, I'm answering phone calls about this nonstop for the last 4 weeks. It's crazy. But it's an interactive website, just like these other. It's an interactive map. You can consider it. You can zoom in, zoom out. You can enter your location, just like I described in SoilWeb. And then the thing is, you click on the map itself, and it brings up the different ratings that we've devised for this interpretation. And so it gives some transparency to the ratings, so we understand what the limiting factors are, and then also gives the overall rating. So this is just, I mean, I was just very excited to see how well received it is. And I think it was main reason why it was so well received is because California has been in a drought for 4 years. And so these taking advantage of those times when we have a crisis or a huge societal need and developing these apps can be really powerful for us as soil scientists. For promoting the soil survey, but also to interject soil science into regional planning. It's not always that easy, and these seem to make a big splash. And so what we're doing in the future, on the horizon in terms of apps, We're going to develop a nitrate leaching hazard index. There was one that was developed by John Luddy, and it's kind of a, they rated some common soil series based on their potential. We're going to try to do is model the soils in a physically based model, process-based model, and then categorize the outcome of the, that modeling into groups that might predict the fate of nitrate leaching under some defined case scenario, and then map it, turn it into an interactive app like this. Some of you may have heard California, there was a report to the legislature showing that our groundwater supplies in agricultural areas are severely contaminated with nitrate. And so there's been this huge push to understand our basins and characterize our agricultural watersheds for nitrate leaching. And actually that promoted some groundwater legislation in California to do this. And so not only are we going to create that app to rank the soils, but then we're going to try to create place-based BMPs. Because this is going to be sourced from model data, we think we can then model that under place conditions, different climatic zones in California, different cropping systems, to try to get a feeling for the potential not only of the soil, but of how the physiography might influence the fate of nitrogen in those soils. So that project has me shaking in my boots. You know, I wrote that grant, got it, and then I thought, oh boy, now we got to make it. But that's going to come out pretty soon, I hope, the next couple of years. Other tools that we're making are drought tolerance maps, both for rangelands and for irrigated agriculture. Irrigated agriculture map might be when look at the water holding capacity of the soil and the climate and try to predict when that first how long you can wait for that first irrigation. Drought tolerance index for rangelands is going to look at the water holding capacity of the soils, aspect, and climate to try to get at drought resilience of certain rangeland soils across the state. We're going to look at, try to develop a phosphorus nutrient management decision support tool and a potassium nutrient management decision support tool, kind of looking at how soil properties might influence these elements in terms of availability. And so those are in the works as we speak also. So that's what we have going on right now, and I think that's all I have for you. So hopefully those of you who have never used SoilWeb can visit the site, tell your friends, your family. The idea is to get all Americans and all people over the world using SoilWeb or other soil survey products for that matter. Happy.
Question I have is for the sites that you showed us today. Right now, they're currently web-based.
Yeah.
Are there plans to develop a native app or
no.
Just like
we've gone away from the native apps because of always upgrading the operating systems. We have to go back and then the fee they require us to pay them to be in the app store. And so we decided we're going to go to these websites. They work just as good, except when you're out of cell phone coverage. And really, you know, damn it, we got to get better cell phone coverage, right? I mean, that's the problem. So I'm hopeful that that will be the case.
Data.
I have never had that complaint. You're the only one that always tells me about that. No, I'm not saying it's not real. But yeah. Yeah, no one has told me that. I maybe the website app is much more data friendly. I don't know. I mean, we've tallied up the figures. We get across all the apps about 5,000 hits a day. So, I mean, maybe it's causing problems, but people are still using it. And so, yeah, I can't...
Maybe I'll just stop bothering you.
No, you're not bothering me at all. But, I mean, some things we can't fix, right? And all we can do is just give them the information. They can decide if they want to use it. But because we've gone away from the native app, I'm pretty confident that we've solved that problem. It still works just like an app. I wish I would have researched this, but you can actually take the web link, and there are ways to turn it into an icon. So you can put it on your phone, and it'll look just like the native app.
Yes.
So
all of that, you know, you just wait a little while, and then it gets solved.
Yeah.
That's what we call.
Yeah. So, yeah.
This is funded by the NRCS, and obviously draws on all that data. Over time, it's going to be integrated with what's a survey or a scan or...
No. So, I mean, it was partially funded by NRCS, also funded by UC of California, and I don't see it being, well, it could. I mean, it's possible that they could integrate. I don't see the value in that. I think it's better to have them separate because they're separate tools. Could you jump in? Yeah. It's something to look into. Yeah. Yeah. What we have to be very mindful of, because we get a lot of people asking us if they can link to our app. I mean, it's endless. And what we have to be very mindful of is we work very hard to make this rapid delivery of information. And if we start linking tools, that can actually slow down our delivery. And so we are not willing to sacrifice that. We think that's one of the biggest benefits of our app, is to be rapid. And so we're very cautious about those type of things, because we do get a lot of asks. But it's a good idea.
For the nitrate leaching and for the drought that you're willing to do, will you have like a permanent feed of climate data that will change?
Yeah, that's the trick. We can... Well, the beauty is we have PRISM data, where we have, you know, annual snapshots that we can simulate from. And what we've, you know, when I conceptualized it, we were going to probably develop some scenarios of climate. But what we're now thinking about is possibly using remote sensing also to help get on demand and on time, more on time, real time interpretations. But it's really very much in its infancy. We actually just submitted a grant to do it, so I don't know if we will. But the idea as of now is to use PRISM to get a snapshot of what the state is like, or a representation of what it was like, but then create scenarios. Okay, what is it going to look like if we have dry winter, wet spring? Okay, what will it look like if we have wet winter, dry spring? All those different scenarios that we can see in the climatic record, and then allow the users to interact with that record in that way so that they can get some feeling for it. All right, thanks.